Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory, with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And not only that, you have obviously a great sales department. This is the time of the year where you're going to get your best trade-in and a fabulous service department to back it all up. And it's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right, so let's get to a couple of notes for you, and then Matt Leon in a few moments. Jerry Dulac, the Steelers play tomorrow night when they take on the Minnesota Vikings on Thursday Night Football. Let's see. We'll start with Dez Holmes putting his name into the transfer portal. Not surprised at that one at all. As this goes through, I'll have more comments on players that have gone into the transfer portal. So far, the names that have gone into the transfer portal for Penn State to me are not earth-shattering, but we'll see how it plays out. But he did put his name in. 1 week from today is letter of intent day. So 1 week from today, the early signing period. The domino of the early signing period is that Lincoln Riley is now at USC. The domino of the early signing period is that Brian Kelly's now at LSU. The domino of the signing period is that Brent Pry's at Virginia Tech. And the domino of the early signing period is the new head football coach at Florida. People made their moves and wanted to get it done before the early signing date because you're trying to somehow save a recruiting class. And that's what they're doing there in each and every case. Mark Whipple had been the offensive coordinator at Pitt. He is leaving. He's becoming the offensive coordinator at Nebraska, 64 years of age. His son, by the way, was a walk-on quarterback here at Penn State years ago. Actually, I liked him. He's a good quarterback. But Kenny Pickett is a Heisman finalist, along with Bryce Young, Aiden Hutchinson, among the finalists for the Heisman Trophy. But Whipple has now landed at Nebraska, where he will be the offensive coordinator with Scott Frost. So that's how it played out. Basketball tonight, Penn State Wagner Jordan Center. Of course, we have Santa tonight coming up from 6 to 7 this evening. 6 to 7 this evening. And one other note, by the way, on college football, two notes, actually. Jeff Tedford returns to Fresno State as the head coach. And Ohio State will go with Jim Knowles as their defensive coordinator. He leaves Oklahoma State to do that. Matt Leon, coming up in a few moments. We'll talk with him about the Philadelphia Eagles. They beat the Jets over the weekend. Eagles have had a mixed bag trying to take care of their schedule, which is a soft part of the schedule right now. So we'll talk to Matt about that. Army-Navy coming up on Saturday from MetLife Stadium. On this, the year of the 20th anniversary of 9/11, they're going to play just outside of New York City. Matt Leon in a moment, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you. This brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Your trade-in's never been worth more. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. The University of Maryland today announced a new multi-year deal with sportsbook PointsBet, the latest partnership between an NCAA program and a bookmaker, and the first for a Big Ten school. As part of the agreement, PointsBet signage will appear in and around the Xfinity Center where they play basketball and Capital One Field at Maryland Stadium. The sportsbook will provide education on responsible gambling to university staff, students, and fans. The partnership will also include a philanthropic component that will be announced at a later date. Financial details were not disclosed, but I can guarantee it wasn't $1.95. But a source familiar with the partnership says it's a seven-figure deal. The deal was brokered by sports marketing company Playfly Sports. Maryland joins LSU, Colorado, the University of Denver, and UNLV as schools that have partnered with Sportsbook. LSU did a deal with Caesars Entertainment in September. Colorado partnered with PointsBet in the spring, and the University of Denver has a partnership with sportsbook operator Superbook. With LSU being the first in the SEC and Maryland the first in the Big Ten, I think you're seeing the trend really come out, said Michael Schreiber, who's the founder and CEO of Playfly Sports, which has brokered multiple sports betting deals with colleges. I think this really puts a mark on the trend line and really shows how this is happening across the country. The state of Maryland is expected to launch its sports betting market this week, which would make it the 30th jurisdiction to offer legal wagering. Online and in-person wagering will be allowed, including in-state colleges and universities. The NCAA remains an opponent to all forms of sports betting over fears that it'll negatively impact the integrity of competition and the well-being of student-athletes. Some of the NCAA's member institutions, like Maryland, however, are now taking a different approach. Indeed, they are. So Maryland will become the 30th entity, 29 states plus D.C., to have sportsbook. Pennsylvania, of course, has had it and was one of the first to have it. But there you go. Brian Ullman, executive associate athletic director of the University of Maryland, said this is the business. If it's legal and we think we can manage it in a responsible way, then I think athletic programs are going to take advantage of that. And certainly the University of Maryland athletic program is taking advantage of that. Interesting. All right, let's talk about the Eagles for a moment, and let's bring in Matt Leon from Philadelphia. Sir, a pleasure as always.
Good to be with you.
Yesterday, just a sterling performance by Gardner Minshew. But, you know, hey, you need your backup quarterback to do some things. He did some things. What did you think?
No, I thought he did a great job. I mean, I think he hit his first 11 passes. You know, they put 33 points on the board. And they put 33 points on the board with the benefit of only one jet turnover. Wasn't like it was constant short field. They ran the ball really effectively again. I don't want to take anything away from Minshew because he was really good and exactly what you want in a number two quarterback in that situation. But I also think he benefited from some course correction in the game plan the week before against the Giants. Right. You know, Dallas Goedert got three targets, had one catch for no yards. Miles Sanders, people wondered why wasn't he getting the ball more. And what you saw yesterday, you know, I think the first four completions all went to Goddard, two of them for touchdowns. And Miles Sanders really, maybe for the first time in his career, Miles Sanders was really utilized like a number one running back.
Yeah.
Where they just pounded him into the line, pounded him, and he finally broke a 30, 35-yarder at the end. So I think Minshew ran exactly what they wanted to do. I think they learned some lessons from the week before. And let's face it, they played a bad Jets team. You put it all together, and you get what you got yesterday.
I can't believe that you'd call the Jets bad. I'm surprised. What kind of analysis is that? When they're scoring touchdowns and they keep missing extra points, you're saying, like, oh, no, brother.
And that kicker, you know, didn't they just sign him like the day before? Well, you know, kids get the chance to play the NFL and it all goes south like that.
He doinked one in Beaver Stadium.
Yeah.
He's not. He doinked one in Beaver Stadium, for goodness sakes, that Pitt needed. You know, and Narduzzi played one of the more conservative coaching games ever. Like, you know, Jack and I are like, he's going to go for it. He's going to go for it. No, we're going to run out the kick. Doink. I was like, okay, great. That worked out well. Oh, man. But defensively, it seemed like they settled down as the game went along. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, I think the Jets scored touchdowns on their first three possessions. I think they went first three. Now, one was a very short field.
Sure.
After a long kickoff return. But, you know, they made the Jets offense look a lot more powerful than it obviously is. Now, after those first three drives, the offense fell off a cliff for the Jets. I think that was adjustments by the Eagles. And I also think it was, frankly, the Eagles just playing keep away with the football. I think the Eagles had the ball something like 13 and a half minutes in the third quarter.
They did, yes.
So, you know, when you're in a game like that, and the Eagles had the ball at like the end of the first half and then got it to start the third quarter, and then, you know, so that enhances, all of a sudden there's kind of a feeling of panic, I think, when you're the Jets offense. You haven't been out there, and, you know, now you got to make the most of every play, and all of a sudden everybody starts pressing, and then all of a sudden you look like the team you really are. I still, you know, the fact that they gave up 18 to this Jets team and didn't put up any pressure on Wilson early, let him make the simple reads. I think, you know, you don't want to, you know, find the gray cloud in front of the silver lining of a victory, but I still don't get a lot of times what they're trying to do defensively. And, you know, I think that's going to be their undoing when it's all said and done. If they don't make the playoffs, you know, it's going to be just an inconsistent, and it's not even the talent level. It's like just an inconsistent approach defensively.
Yeah, no, right about that. And I felt like that in the trenches, the Eagles just kept controlling the game. And that really hasn't happened a lot this year, where you walked out of there and thought, like, on both sides of the ball, they controlled the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the Eagles' offensive line is really operating at an elite level right now. And when you look at what Jordan Mailata's become at the tackle position, obviously you've got Kelsey and Lane Johnson, you know, but Landon Dickerson, who's a rookie, who, you know, after the great career at Alabama, that you just about every week now, there are one or two video clips that come out of a game that just show them like literally steamrolling guys 15 yards down the field. And the, you know, I think it's five straight games now they've rushed for more than 175 yards, you know, and this one was all running game. This wasn't, you know, a lot of the other ones, right. You could argue Jalen Hurts helped that. Although, to be fair, they utilize a lot of quarterback power and like designed runs with Hurts. It's not all of him running for his life. But, I mean, yesterday they shoved it down the Jets' throat and there was nothing they could do about it.
Right, yeah, no question. Look, and as I mentioned last week, there is no great team in the NFL. There are a lot of good teams, several above the Mendoza line teams, and then a lot of mediocre teams. This benefits Philadelphia. They're not in the wild card spot, but Minnesota losing yesterday to Detroit, then, you know, that helped Philadelphia. Washington rallying to win didn't.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, the Eagles, I'm pretty sure until Washington won, the Eagles were the seven.
Yes, they were.
The Eagles were that final wild card until Washington won that game. I mean, they still play Washington twice.
Right.
You pretty much have to feel that those games are going to go a long way to determining the playoff, you know, situation for the Eagles. But, I mean, you look, Eagles have a bye this week. And this is one of those where I think when the schedule comes out and you look and you see a late bye, you're like, oh, God, that's terrible. But then when you actually get there, they're like, oh, wow, this is great. When you're in contention and now you get the rest up and, you know, it's a sprint to the finish. You know, well, they got Washington twice,
yeah.
Dallas home, and the Giants home.
Right.
And, you know, they don't have to get on a plane again. And it's right there in front of them. Now, you know, you watch yesterday, and you're like, oh, I feel pretty good about things. You know, and then 2 weeks ago, you're like, oh, my God, I can't, this team might finish fifth in the AAC. Like, you know, it's you're kind of a week to week. And I think that's what you get with mediocrity. You know, some weeks they really make you open your eyes, and then other weeks they make you look away. So it's just kind of nice to have them in contention at this point in the season because – you know, a month and a half ago, didn't they? People were much more interested in the draft pick tracker than they were the actual game. So, you know, give them credit that they kind of turned things around when, you know, after a couple of those losses early on, it looked like, you know, this might get really, really ugly.
Right.
But it hasn't, and they're in the hunt.
What's Jalen Hurts' status when you're moving forward?
You listen to him talk this past week, and you thought he was going to play.
Right.
I think coming in with the bye, I would be very surprised. You haven't gotten any indication that it's a significant injury, and, you know, he was a game-time decision going in, or, you know, a game-day decision going into yesterday.
Aren't we all?
So, indeed, you know. but 2 weeks, I'd be very, very surprised if he's not ready to go when they come back from the bye.
Sir, always a pleasure. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Matt Leon, Philadelphia. As we talk about the Eagles, Steelers, of course, will play tomorrow night. They'll take on the Minnesota Vikings, and we'll talk to Jerry Dulac in the next half hour. Mark Brennan joins us on this show today as well to talk Penn State football and basketball. Nittany Lions, by the way, at Wagner tonight, Michigan State on Saturday. Michigan State will open the Big Ten tonight at Minnesota, as a matter of fact. So it's that busy time of the year. I was on today, and I was being interviewed this morning by somebody, and they said, so at this time of the year, you know, what do you do? I said, well, I got a game tonight. Oh, that's right, you do basketball. Oh, you always have games. I said, yeah, I got a game tonight. I got a game Saturday. I got the football banquet on Sunday. National Letter of Intent Day, I have to do something on Wednesday. Then I got a road game in Richmond on the 18th and a home game on the 22nd. Home game on the 29th, fly to Tampa on the 30th, do the game at Tampa on the 1st, fly back right after the game because I have home game on the 2nd. He started laughing. He said, okay, you are busy. I said, that's what I prefer. Right? You give me a choice between sitting around and doing the greatest job on the face of the earth, Penn State football and basketball. I'll be out there doing Penn State football and basketball every single time. I'm not going to sit around. But Joe Paterno's old line for years, he said, what am I going to do, cut grass? Yesterday, I can tell you what I did out. I went out and raked yesterday. I want to tell you, that stunk. I'd rather do the game. All right, Jerry Dulac, next half hour. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. So important. They go over these vehicles with a fine-tooth comb. And that Sunbury Motors Guarantee means so much. Your trade-in, by the way, has never been worth more, and you'll have a sales staff that's going to work with you. They are great to deal with. And a fabulous service department that takes care of everything from difficult to the routine. Routine is critical. Routine is critical. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Previous half hour, we talked about Maryland, its new multi-year deal with the sportsbook PointsBet. And they are the first Big Ten school to enter into this partnership. And LSU, Colorado, University of Denver, UNLV already have agreements like this. Maryland, of course, as a state, enters into the sports book world itself this week. They'll become the 30th jurisdiction to offer legal wagering. And that will be online and in-person wagering will be allowed in Maryland, including the ability for people to bet on in-state colleges and universities. UMBC, University of Maryland, Towson State, Navy. I mean, you know, you can do that. The NCAA, of course, has been adamant that sportsbook is going to have a negative impact on the integrity of competitions and well-being of student-athletes. Look, let's pretend it never could have happened before, because offshore wagering has been there forever. Now institutions like Maryland are taking a different approach. And as Brian Ullman, who's the executive associate athletic director at Maryland, said, quote, "This is the business." He said, "If it's legal, which it is, and we think we can manage it in a responsible way," which I think most people can, "but I think athletic programs are going to take advantage of it. And the University of Maryland is taking advantage of it." It's a seven-figure deal, by the way. Seven-figure deal. You've got to be able to find financial resources. And if it's legal, yeah, I can completely understand why they did it. All right, Steelers, big win on Sunday over Baltimore. Not a lot of time to celebrate. They play tomorrow against the Vikings on Thursday Night Football. Our good friend, my good friend, Jerry Dulac joins us. Jerry, great to have you with us as always.
Well, Steve, thank you, and same to you. And I hope you're doing well. And, yeah, can't complain. All good here. Just waiting to see how this thing unfolds. As we have seen, it's week to week with this football team.
It's amazing. It was almost quarter to quarter yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Watching that. So what do you think turned it for them offensively from a team that had the ball, what, 6.5 minutes in the first half to a team that won the game?
Well, I think, you know, we have seen pockets, as you mentioned in this game, quarter to quarter. We have seen pockets where this football team played the way they would like to play. The fourth quarter in L.A., which was extreme. Defensive stops, defensive takeaways, 27 points, offensive points, you know, a block punt, doing the things necessary to come back from 24-10 and look like you're going to win the game, and then you give up an over-the-top touchdown, 53 yards, you know, bang like that, and you lose to the Chargers. But you think, okay, you know, that's the way, obviously, any team would like to play, but that's what they kind of hope to be, and then they come back the following week and just get embarrassed in Cincinnati. And then they come against the Ravens with the best team in the AFC. Now, I will say this, Steve, I thought all along, you know, the Ravens have had problems scoring points. They're actually lucky to be 8-3, or at least were 8-3. They could easily have been 4-7, but they weren't, and that's to their testament. They're the most resilient team I think I've ever seen, and they almost did it again yesterday. And if it wasn't for a little a wide pitch out on that, you know, that T.J. Watt caused on that two-point conversion, they'd have done it again. They'd have won another game in the last minute when, or last seconds, when it doesn't look like they're going to. But to your point, I think their ability to continually run the ball, which was a little surprising because they've had problems with that in the fourth quarter. And, you know, Ben being Ben does what he does more times than anyone except Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and that's engineer another fourth quarter comeback. And that's when he's at his best. He's been there a million times. He's calm. He's poised. He's confident. And, you know, he knows how to run that hurry up, that two-minute, that no huddle, whatever you want to call it, because they kind of have different names for it and different schemes for it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think defense, you know, making some plays. I think they got a little help from some of the erratic throws of Lamar Jackson, who, you know, I believe is the most unstoppable player in the league. But I will say he has struggled, and that's why their offense has struggled. he has struggled with his accuracy and throwing interceptions, which we saw on the very first series, heaving that ball in the end zone, you know, throwing a jump ball when he had no business doing it on the run. But it's almost, by watching him, it's almost like Lamar could play poorly for, or average, below average, for three quarters. And then when he has to, he throws, it's like he throws on a switch. And then he's Lamar, the Superman, and does pretty much whatever he wants to do. And I think there was a combination of things that helped do that, but their ability, you know, to keep the Ravens off the scoreboard, I think, until the very end there. I mean, was you know, a team that had given up 82 points in the previous two games, you know, keeping the Ravens under control until that last drive, I thought was a big key.
Jerry, the Steelers this season have picked their spots to blitz, but yesterday they blitzed not a little, they blitzed a lot. What kind of difference did it make?
Well, there's no question, Stephen. I don't have the exact numbers yet on what percentage of time they blitzed, but I will say this. When you look at their numbers last year, everything from sacks to blitz pressure to percentage of blitzes to quarterback knockdowns to percentage of knockdowns to pressures to percentage of pressures, they led the league in most of those categories, and or they finished second and third in just a couple of the others. This year, their numbers were way off that. Other than sacks, there was nothing higher than 18th in the league rankings. And so they were trying to rely on four-man pressure and on occasion five. We have seen the fire zone blitz, Dick LeBeau's fire zone blitz, disappear from this defense. But that lack of pressure, to me, was causing them a lot of problems. Justin Herbert being able to stand back there and you know, throw for 382 yards, you know, and even on that last touchdown that I referred to earlier. So they sacked Lamar Jackson seven times, which is a career high for Lamar Jackson. I'm still amazed a guy who is as elusive and as quick and as fast and explosive as Lamar Jackson could be sacked seven times in a game. I have a hard time believing that happens, and yet he sacked an awful lot. But I think their pressure, no question, and the pressure of T.J. Watt on that last two-point conversion, something as simple as that made him throw that little sidearm pitch out, and it just missed Mark Andrews. He got his fingertips on it, but you know, he didn't come up with the catch. And just something as simple as that pressure actually won the game for him.
Yeah, exactly. Although you have to explain to me why Andrews is open. That's a different story.
Well, I'll tell you, Lamar Jackson missed him earlier in the end zone on that final drive. He was wide open. And look, I'm with you, but I think what you would, it's hard to see on TV, but there's no question what they tried to do. They were going to eliminate the big play over the top to Marquise Brown. And no, so whatever that entailed, and you saw the way the Ravens started to drive, just throwing underneath checkdowns or just throwing underneath to running backs because the Steelers were leaving the middle of the field open because they weren't going to let number five get behind them or make big plays against them. And I think that was part of the reason. But, hey, as we know and we saw yesterday, he both likes to throw to Mark Andrews, whether it's down the field or over the middle, and they're just lucky they got away with it. The Steelers got away with it a couple times.
All right. What did you think about the decision to go for two by John?
You know, when it happened, I thought he's crazy because I thought, hey, look, you just kick the extra point. You have Justin Tucker and play for overtime. You just expended a lot of energy, mental and physical, to put yourself in that position. You know, play for overtime. It's not like you're facing Tom Brady or the Green Bay Packers, a team that was scoring tons of points. It was not like the Steelers were going up and down the field. Right. And Jim Harbaugh's explanation afterward was, you know, Marlon Humphrey was out, and he says, and we were out of corners. And he just thought, you know what, I'm not taking any more chances. In retrospect, I agree with the decision for two reasons. One, because you got Lamar Jackson in the backfield. I understand the Ravens, you know, they go on fourth down when two-point conversion is probably more than any team in the league. And when you have Lamar Jackson under center or behind center, and the, I, I'm, look, how many times, more times than not, he's going to get you 2 yards. So with him back there, I get it. And here's the other thing, too. This was explained to me by, you know, the NFL people think this way sometimes, is that when in that situation, Steve, you got one chance to win the game. You just got to make one play to win the game.
Yep.
If you go to overtime, you probably have to make 3, 4, 5 plays to win the game, whether they're defensive plays or offensive plays. Now you only have to make one. And when you have Lamar Jackson, the chances of making that one play, certainly on offense, are in your favor. And so because of that, I get it. I don't blame him. We saw Mike Tomlin do it years ago in 2015 in San Diego. A similar situation. It wasn't a two-point conversion. They had the ball on the Chargers' 1-yard line. It was the last play of the game. They put Le'Veon Bell in the Wildcat. They snapped it to him. He went in the end zone. They figured, hey, we got one shot, one very good shot to end this right here instead of kicking the field goal and going to overtime. And he did. And they got away with it. I mean, they were successful. And so I get it. Like I said, the more I thought about it, the less problem I had with it.
In fact, when he did it, I liked it. I thought, what? You got a shot to win it right here. I mean, I was all
right.
For it. Yeah, I mean, Auburn, Alabama, that's the mistake I thought at the time Brian Harsin of Auburn made. You got Alabama there. Just go for it and see if you can just beat the king right there.
Right,
and he didn't do it.
I think if the Ravens are at home, I think maybe he kicks it. Maybe I'm wrong. But I asked Mike Tomlin today, I says, hypothetical question, reverse the situation. Say you were on, that was you on the goal line, and you know you have a Thursday night game. Would you try to win it right there and not have to go to overtime knowing you had a game 4 days later? And he said probably. He said possibly, probably. And, yeah. And it's just sometimes the analytics, they're numbers, they're percentages, but sometimes those analytics don't take into account some of the game factors, whether it's momentum, whether it's weather, whether it's home or away, whether, like in this instance or this hypothetical, the Steelers might have a game 4 days later, and maybe you don't want to go to overtime. So there are other factors that come into play with those analytics.
Thoughts on Ben now, seeing the finish line of a career?
Well, I want to be clear here, and I hope you understand that was a little bit of a stretch by Adam Schefter.
Got it.
Ben did not say that. He's saying that he told teammates. But what I do want to say, Steve, is look, we've known this. Haven't talked to Ben many times. Off the record, personally, this was his last contract year. They gave him a 1-year deal, and that's it. He doesn't have a new contract. And after there being much discussion whether to bring him back this year, there has been nothing that has happened so far this year to change their mind to think, oh, yeah, we're going to bring him back for another year, when they debated it long and hard this past year. And I have said all along, the only way they are bringing him back is if he makes a run to the AFC Championship game or the Super Bowl. And I... based on everything we've seen, I'd say that's highly unlikely and very improbable. To say this is his final year and say he's telling people, to a degree, I think the Steelers have spelled that out to him. Not saying definitively, but look, I know he knows that. He knows that's probably, this is probably, it was, from the Steelers' standpoint, was going to be his last year. And he won one more year to try and win a Super Bowl. And that's not happening. And I think Ben, he can see with that offensive line and everything else, they're not that type of team. Doesn't mean they won't try. But I think he understands this is going to be it. And like I said, barring an unforeseen Super Bowl run, I think it's safe to say this will be his final year.
Jerry, Thursday, Vikings, short weeks. How predictable or unpredictable to you are short weeks?
Well, they would certainly be unpredictable because you don't know how some teams are going to respond physically, whether they're an older team, whether they're a younger team, or whether they're a veteran team that understands what they have to do, or if they're a young team that doesn't know how to prepare on a short week. I will say this, in his last three Thursday night games, since we're talking about Ben, he's thrown 12 touchdowns and no interceptions, and his passer rating is 140. So, you know, so if his last three games, Thursday night games, is one each year, so that means he was 38, 37, and 36. So even at age 36 on a short week, when he typically won't even practice most times till Thursday, now he has to play a game. It hasn't right. bothered him, and if it's going to bother anybody, it would bother the quarterback. Yeah, you got Cam Hayward, who's 30, 32, 31. You know, will he be ready? He'll be ready. But it's hard to predict, you know, how that's going to play out. Because, you know, and hey, both teams are in the same boat. But I also think it has something to do with the quality of your depth. And you know, the Vikings are without a couple starters, including Dalvin Cook, which is going to be a big one for them. And I guess the receiver, I guess he was hurt yesterday, and I haven't heard anything more. But it's going to be up to your depth to, you know, to be able to rotate players to see, you know, to see how you're going to survive on a short week.
And by the way, Marlon Humphrey is done for the rest of the season.
Right, right. I saw that, yeah.
Jerry, my good friend, thank you so much. Appreciate you very much. And we will talk soon.
Well, Steve, it's always good at chatting with you. I was at least, you know, it's so disappointed, as you know, in the overall tenure of the season, knowing your season, how close it could have been. And I'll tell you what else real quickly, what I discovered the other day, which I did not know. My friend Ken Wisenhunt was on that Penn State staff as an analyst all year, and I didn't know that. I speak with him from time to time. I hadn't spoken with him in a while. I called him last week, and he told me, he says, you know what I've been doing? He told me, and I said, I never knew that. Good for him. He's a great guy. He's a great coach, and I hope he gets back in the NFL soon.
Absolutely, and I've had a few conversations with Ken. I know exactly how you feel about him, Jerry. He's just a great guy, great mind, too.
The funny thing is, Steve, real quickly, is, you know, in watching the games, and I remember this three games ago, as I'm watching on TV, I thought, my God, that guy looks like Ken Wisenhunt. I didn't think anything more of it. And I realized it was Ken Wisenhunt. That's why it looked like
it. Oh, my goodness. Jerry, thanks so much, my friend. We will talk soon.
Yeah, I hope so, Steve. Always good chatting with you, my friend.
And the great Jerry Dulac. And it's one of the, you know what? It's one of the fun parts of this business is you develop just great relationships with people, you know, people along the way. I mean, because Jerry's a Penn State guy, I'm a Penn State guy, but we didn't cross paths that often. Now we cross paths all the time. And the more I talk to him, man, he is just a super guy. I mean, really is a great guy. And I have nothing but as a person and as a professional, and nothing but the best to say about Jerry. Privileged to have him on, as always. All right, great to have you with us today. Mark Brennan is going to join us in the next hour of the show to talk Penn State football and basketball. Of course, the Outback Bowl with Arkansas is coming up 3 weeks from Saturday. That sound right? I think that's right. 3 weeks from Saturday will be the game. Meanwhile, tonight, Nittany Lion basketball, Wagner in the Jordan Center. Now, the net is always a little squirrely early in the season, but Wagner is 23 in the net. Now, in the KenPom, which Dick and I put more juice into, they're 133. But they've only played four games. But that game will be tonight at the Jordan Center. We got Santa tonight, 6-7 on the show. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.